The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of binge misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Everyone relax, this is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. I love that you did a little 3-2-1. I did a TOEFOP with Gareth today on the day that we're recording this. People will have already been able to hear it. It will be up already by the time this comes out. But Gareth said at the start of the dollop when they're recording in different places, like Dave will go 1-2 and then Gareth will say 3-4 to give the correct timing so it can be like synced.
So
we're in the same room, so it's probably a little unnecessary in this scenario. But if we were in different places, you would go 1-2 and I would go 3-4, and it gives you a sense of what the timing and the delay is.
So you just chop that distance out of each exchange? Is that the idea?
I mean, we did talk about that for 20 minutes of whether it was actually helpful or not. And I'm not sure it is, to be honest. But I would love Podcast Mike to let us know, because you know, obviously when you do TV shows and stuff, they'll do a clap.
Yep.
Like on Gruen, like we were doing, like you have a clapper, like, you know, it's an old fashioned, like people would imagine that sort of, you know, that piece of wood with the little bit that flips off the top, a clapperboard. That's still what they use. And so Russell was in a different studio in Melbourne, but he would have his own clapperboard. And so they would count down from 10 and then he would clap. We would clap. And then he would, when he heard it, clap.
Yeah.
And I was like, but then we would spend like an hour and a half shooting a TV show, like, you know, stopping, having to fix a microphone, do all these things. Are you telling me that when someone edits a television show, it's still helpful to have that clap at the start? Do you think that is still a helpful thing to
100%.
Do?
As someone who's edited TOEFOP videos before, when we've done like recorded the full episodes, like because sync can be a bit rubbery, even with, like, you know, the best camera shooting 4K, sometimes frame rates shift. And there's many times editing TOEFOP that it would start getting out of sync. And I wouldn't notice straight away, I'll be honest with you. We're both mumblers. It's hard to lip read. But then, because we hardly ever...
This is dubbed. No, that's just them. They actually speak in real life out of sync.
Well, when we did the first, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 recorded ones that I filmed, we didn't use a clap because there is a program when we're using Premiere, which is like an automatic sync. So you just take the footage from all three cameras, sound from all three cameras, you put it in a big bucket, the computer stirs it up and blends it out as one thing. So it's kind of that, you know, tech convenience. It's not the old fashioned editors would probably have a problem with doing something like that. And I found after 4 episodes that it wasn't perfect. And doing the clapper, we started clapping after that. Just looking at the waveform and seeing the peak of the wave and knowing that you can just move a frame of the exact moment the clapper will collapse, it's more precise.
Well, there you go. Well, see, okay. Well, then I apologize.
No, I didn't think you were like poo-pooing the idea of clapperboards. You just were asking a genuine question.
Yeah, I know. But here's what I would say. I think it would be unfair for me to categorize it as just being an inquiry. I think that I have been erring on the side of poo-pooing it.
Oh, right.
I believe that I have thought it was unnecessary and anachronistic.
You want every film crew around the world to fire their camera assistants.
I was just like, is this really helpful? Like,
look at you, you fucking Wolf of Wall Street, coming into film crews and just like streamlining them to maximize profit.
Yeah, I know I'm sitting in the middle of you all doing your job and I know nothing actually about how you do your job other than you are really good at doing your job. I'm going to second guess something you think is necessary.
That happens all the time. I see it on sets all the time, especially with actors, is that they have no idea about what is going on technically, but they presume that they do. And that they can do something that they haven't cleared or spoken about or whatever, and then get annoyed when someone says, hey, if you step out of where the light is shining, we can't see your face. Like, really simple things. Like, I think where there is a tendency with performers to be self-involved and to think this is where the money is and all the other shit, catch up. Hey, I'm a fucking fireball. I'm just going to do my thing. You grab it, you catch it, you do whatever you want with it, man. I'm going back to my trailer.
Like, anyway, firstly, before you go on with the rest of the story, Charlie, I'd like to say I feel seen.
Will Fireball Anderson. I come out, I burn bright. You catch it, fellas. I'm out here. No, I think there are performers who get to a level where that is the case. Like, I don't imagine fucking Robert De Niro is doing more than one take these days. Like, he's proved his mettle. We know he can act. So I reckon he would be like, and there'd be comedians.
And for Dirty Grandpa, he would just be like, you get like
half a take. Yeah,
and you have to stretch it out.
You get the first word.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll shoot a sentence over a week. I mean, you do hear about, like, Bruce Willis apparently is notorious for being like the laziest actor and will just turn up. Just, I'm going to do all my close-ups. You get three sizes, then I'm out of here. Get a body double. I don't care. Like, routinely calls into places and says, what are you shooting today? Nah, I'm going to go to the baseball. See you later. But he just keeps getting hired. So, like, who's laughing now?
Well, he is, I imagine, right? Because at some stage during his life, he's made a decision about
not giving a shit.
But also whether he gives a shit about other people's feelings,
yeah.
Right? So it is a wonderful way to live your life, being so incredibly self-involved and only caring about yourself.
Like you're in Groundhog Day.
Exactly.
No
right?
consequences.
No consequences to your action, except that you actually do still exist in the real world and there are consequences to your actions. Like if you go to the baseball, no matter how, isn't it great that you've arranged your life so that you can tell people to get fucked and shoot something else because you want to go to the baseball? All those other people still have to get fucked and shoot something else.
Yeah.
Like, so it's how much you care about, other people's pain for your involvement.
Let's role play this. So
yes, okay.
You be the producer who's calling me,
okay.
The arrogant actor who's taken the day off, right? And so, bring. Hello?
Is that Charlie?
Yeah.
Charlie, it's Will from the movie that you're the lead in at the moment. The producer of the film.
Is this going to take very long? Because I'm cooking Pop Tarts.
Okay, so this is interesting to me because you're meant to be here on set at the moment, and from your own admission, you've just admitted that you're at home cooking Pop Tarts. So,
I had a massive night last night. Got pretty drunk.
Yeah, great. That's fantastic. You know, always encourage you to get out and about, loosen up. You know me. I'm a fun guy. Had some fun times together.
That's why we call you the mushroom, right?
Exactly right. That's what they call me. Like I've asked you to
stop. It's not about your dick, is it? Because there are rumors.
Okay, well, again, like it is now inappropriate in the industry we're working in for me to discuss what my dick looks like.
Hell. One of the politically correct producers, are you?
I love what you're doing.
Yeah.
I love this whole renegade attitude to what you're doing.
You got a point, buddy?
Yeah. My point is this. That there are a lot of other people who work on this film and they all rely on you. In fact, I would argue that a lot of them look at you as an idol, somebody that they... Hello.
Oh, boy.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, my goodness.
We're having a little...
ice cream and Tim Tam break.
Okay. Oh, actually, that does look pretty amazing.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, this will be great.
Interrupted.
This will be great for the
podcast. Improv group.
Oh, boy.
Mm. So Amy's brought in some delicious ice cream with Tim Tams in it. We did have a bit going, but I'm over it now.
Oh, boy. Yum.
My point being, I reckon that dude, he would rationalize the idea of holding up a crew as being like, well, fuck, they're getting paid regardless, right? They're not going to shut down the production for one day. Besides, I told the director that those pages were shit, that we need to get a rewrite. He wouldn't listen to me. So if he's not going to take his job seriously, why should I take my job seriously? That would be his rationale.
But you should lead by example. You should be the person, your frustration with him not taking his job seriously, it doesn't even it out for you not to take your job seriously. It justifies the fact that he doesn't do his job seriously. The only way you can convince him to take his job seriously is that you take your job more seriously than he takes his job.
I don't have any leverage unless I do this. If I want him to take his job seriously, because I'm assuming that you've had words with him and you've told him that, you know, we can't continue like this. Have you asked him to lift his game or are you just calling me?
Oh, I've spoken to him as well, of course. And I want you guys to work together because I think together you're going to make something amazing. But I'll tell you what, eventually one of you is going to have to go from this. I'm just not going to go on like this with this friction.
I dare you. You're going to get rid of me? Do you know how much money you already owe me? Do you know how much money I'm going to make from the merchandise from this? You're going to get rid of me. Have you spoken to my agent? Have you spoken to my manager? Have you spoken to my lawyer? Because I think they'd have a pretty negative view of this. Mm. How much money do you want to lose?
I don't want to lose.
This director's already got you 2 weeks behind and you're going to threaten me. I'm the only reason people are going to come see this film.
You're not the only actor in the world.
Oh, fuck you. Fuck you. You know what? I want you to fire me because I want to take all your money and shut this shit show down. I'll be laughing all the way to the bank. You think I give a shit? You got nothing to threaten me with.
Oh, I think we have plenty to threaten you with. I mean, there was a couple of incidents on the set that we kept pretty quiet over the next couple of weeks. But if you're released from your contract, if you're fired, then we have the rights to release all those non-disclosure documents we got signed on your behalf in the first couple of weeks of this shoot. I mean, that would be, yes, you would not be working on this film anymore and you'd probably have to save the money you made out of us because nobody in this town would touch you or hire you again after some of that got out.
I could go to Bulgaria and work for the next 10 years and I do 2 weeks, I make double what you're paying me at the moment. I don't give a shit. That doesn't scare me.
Good luck in Bulgaria. Here's a little book about the language of Bulgaria for you to study if you believe that is better than you just not going to the baseball today and you coming in. You know what? Pop your Pop-Tarts, put them in some foil, and you can eat them on the car. We've got a car out the front at the moment. You're going to come in here. If the director doesn't come in today, I'm going to keep paying the one who turned up to his job.
Are you Sorry. I think you must have gone through a tunnel or something. I just lost you for a second. Hang on. Are you eating ice cream while you're talking to me?
Gelato. I'm eating gelato, technically.
Fuck you. Click. Scene. Yeah, look.
I nearly choked on a nut.
But, I mean, I reckon that is how those conversations would go. He doesn't give a shit, clearly. He doesn't try. I heard Nick and Meso talking about maybe I'm talking about Bruce Willis. I think it's Liam Neeson, but they're asking the question, why does Liam Neeson keep doing these? You know, like the last 10 years, every Liam Neeson film is a spin on Taken. He's some middle-aged man who's going to go out and kill some people for some reason. And they're like, why does he keep doing this? He doesn't need to. He's made enough money. You know, he's had critical success as well. But then I think it was Meso brought up that those guys can go to Bulgaria. And the, say the budget of the film is like $15 million. He's going to get 10 and only has to work for like 2 weeks. So it's like, well, why would he give a shit? I mean, you couldn't threaten him with money.
But what I would say about Liam Neeson is I think those movies are super watchable. I'm very much in the... Because every now and again, there's an article about Liam Neeson's not going to make any of these movies anymore. And I'm like, no. During lockdown, I have been aching for when I flip on the app Apple TV that there might be some new Liam Neeson movie where like someone does him wrong and then he hunts them down.
So what was the last one you remember seeing? I didn't see it, but I saw a billboard for something to do with being cold.
The wolves, where he fights wolves.
No, that was ages ago. The recent one where it's like, it's got one of those like Pulp Fiction crime thriller titles, like Cold Death or Cold.
Bad guy who has one more mission, or he's like the cop on his final.
I mean, this could be any one of his films.
He's a criminal who wants to admit to a crime that he got away with. And so Liam Neeson's character is, like a great old criminal. And he wants to confess to a crime and then gets mixed up in. Is that?
I think because the film I'm thinking of came out in 2019.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Since then, he's made 6 movies in 2 years, which have the titles. So the film I was thinking of was called Cold Pursuit. I knew it was one of those kind of hard-boiled titles. Then there's Ordinary Love, made in Italy.
Oh, Cold Pursuit, I saw. Really good.
Okay.
I enjoyed it.
But what is the plot of it? He's a sheriff He's a
in a country town, and some bad shit goes down, and then he hunts people.
Oh no, it's not even that.
He hunts people down with
a grieving snowplow.
Snowplow. That's what I was about to say. He hunts them down with a snowplow.
Seeks out revenge against the drug dealers who killed his son.
Yeah.
Fuck.
With a snowplow.
So is every one of these films about a relative of his gets killed?
Oh, just it does not necessarily a relative. He's just some like old. He's you know what he I mostly like him to be a man with a certain set of skills.
Yeah.
That's your prime. It's not even about the vengeance.
He found his idea.
It's about that people are fucking with someone. He's someone who just wants to go about his business now. He doesn't want to be out murdering people and hunting them down and having to snowplow a whole bunch of people to death. He's a reluctant hero. But back in the day,
he could
fuck shit up. And you've messed with the wrong person.
Go with me here.
That's the genre.
I reckon Liam Neeson and Keanu Reeves have had very similar careers in the sense that they both sort of achieved initial fame as one kind of archetype, or maybe like, you know, different flavors of the same kind of character, disappeared for a bit, then came back and readopted a new persona. So Liam Neeson was, remember he was Mentor? He was like Ra's al Ghul, he was Qui-Gon Jinn. If you needed a mentor, him and Morgan Freeman, that were the two numbers on your speed dial. But that, now he's like, you know, murderous middle-aged revenge man. Keanu was Surfer Dude Woe, kind of even like Speed, Point Break, Matrix still, not Surfer Dude, but like Woe, disappears for a bit, John Wick. Now he's very comfortable being indestructible murder man. Do you see the similarities?
Yeah, absolutely do. And it gives me hope that we've got another 15 or 20 years of John Wick movies. Or, you know, Keanu style, like, because I could easily, because Liam Neeson's got to be 10 years older than Keanu Reeves, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So if the next 10 years are Keanu Reeves making like Liam Neeson style movies, like where there's just like six of them a year and he just like shoots them and it's just him being sort of like going around killing people, I'd be fine with that.
Is it appealing to the same demographic, or is John Wick the kind of Gen X version of the boomer Liam Neeson? And if so, is there a millennial version?
Oh, who's the next one? By the way, people hate when you eat
I'm
on
sorry,
podcast,
but it was so delicious. We could not resist eating it.
It was gelato and a Tim Tam.
Two flavours of gelato with a bloody Tim Tam in it.
And what sort of Tim Tam was it? Because it was
double coat.
Yeah, it was. So macadamia, like, and white chocolate gelato with pistachio gelato. I nearly choked on one of those nuts.
Podcast mic, just take that clip. Just take that out in isolation. Send it to me. Stat.
And then the Tim Tam. And we just, I know we both were like, oh, we should not be eating this and trying to keep going with this podcast, but it was just so tasty.
Yeah. I think people by now know that what part food plays in our lives, and they might have got some enjoyment from it.
That gelato is from Benny Lato down the road. This a wonderful man. I like Benny, who has his own little gelato.
Is his surname actually Lato?
Yeah, he's in a big family of gelato makers. So his business is called Benny Lato, but his name is Benny and he makes gelato. I don't know how he got the name Benny Lato for the business, but he's a really good guy and he makes very nice gelato, but he is a super salesman too. Mm. Like, he's one of those guys who's so charming. So his gelato stand is next to the place I get coffee in the morning. Like, the little town near where I live only has four shops. Like, there's, you know, four shops in the entire strip. So it's not like if you visit one place, you see everyone at all of the places. And so when I'm getting my coffee and I'm standing outside, he's often there with his gelato stand and we'll get chatting. And if I get chatting to him, I know I will buy something.
How much gelato do you reckon he moves?
A good amount. He's there most days, yeah. And he always seems quite busy.
And does he do other places?
No, this is just like his permanent location. Yeah.
I mean, because it is kind of not remote, but it's, you know, it's a country town.
Yeah.
So,
but he dominates. Yeah. There's no other place to get gelato in this town.
He's that footballer. He'll kick 18 in a grand final. But then, can he play it in the big leagues?
Well, it's kind of the perfect demographic, because there's a point where you're like, well, how much gelato do I need to sling? right?
Yeah.
Because if I'm slinging so much, suddenly there's a line. Suddenly, like, I need maybe two people behind the gelato overheads. Stand. Right? I've got all these overheads. Maybe there is, like, a perfect number where you're just like, I can come up here. This is my business. Enough people come through here. I got this new whale. I'm like a casino whale. I'm like literally. I'm an Asian gambler who's been like flown in by some crime syndicate to launder some money. Because every day when he sees me, he must be like, I bet I can get him to eat some more.
Yeah, he sees your Tofop South Park t-shirt and he's like, I bet this guy's hungry in the middle of the day.
Oh yeah, but it's always like 10:30 in the morning or something. Right. Like I'm getting coffee. And so it's always way too early to like eat it. Because if it was like afternoon, I could just get like a cone or something, right?
Yeah.
But because it's 10:30 in the morning, I always get a tub.
Because you're going to eat it later.
Because you're going to eat it later.
So when you buy treats for yourself, like do you always have treats in the house or is it like...
Yes.
Okay.
Always.
Right.
So I guess they're not...
How do you not... Do you... How quickly do you go through them? Does stuff sit there? Like if you've got, I mean, I guess cake will only last 2 or 3 days, but like I bought some Tim Tams around tonight. How long will they last?
I mean, not very long. No. No, we both like to sit on the couch at night if we're watching something or whatever and eat some like...
Treats.
Some treats. We are at the moment in a bit of a health foodie treat zone, but not that health foodie. Like there's still a bunch of chocolates and stuff, but it's like chocolate covered freeze dried banana and like, you know, there's like,
you know, ways you can make yourself feel better about stuff like
that. Well, I mean, we haven't really done it as a, we're going to try to be more healthy. We were in the health food shop buying some other things. And to be honest, you kind of sometimes just get sick of the treats you normally have. And it's kind of like, oh yeah, we're just in a bit of a
treatless phase.
Yeah. Well, no, just more like a dark chocolate and ginger sort of phase than
you're in geriatric treat. Yeah. Like right. Boiled lollies.
Yeah.
My grandma used to love
jelly beans.
Lollies.
There's been a bunch of jelly beans in the house.
Yeah, it's weird. Now when I'm having treats, because I can't have them in the house, because my rationales are always, once you put the first one in, do the whole pack. Because otherwise, I'm going to draw this out. It's going to be a constant sort of thing I'm thinking about. So I will double drop like two wagon wheels at once and go about my business. But then what I've been doing now is sort of trying to be a bit more spontaneous about it. So if I, rather than I'm going to get a Kit Kat or whatever, if I see something that looks really good, I get it. But I sort of rule out the kind of mundane, I'm bored treats and I try and go for, give myself a real treat, make myself feel special.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I've been a good boy.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
And that, you know what? It's actually cut down the amount of treats I've been getting because I've eaten a lot of things, Will. But for instance, I was at this food market 2 weeks ago and there was a sourdough donut stand and I'm very picky with my donuts and I didn't like the look of them, but I was like, you know what? They look like they've been fancied with their fillings and stuff. I'm going to go for it. My God, they were the 4 best donuts I ever ate. But I don't feel like an urge now to go out and get like, I'm going to wait till next month when the market's back. I'm going to get another 4 donuts. So it's more about like this kind of having stuff to look forward to.
So I haven't been drinking much at all, actually, for like a while now. And it's kind of the time has flown by because I initially sort of just stopped for gruen. And then I just kind of was like, oh, I'm actually feeling a bit better not drinking. So I might just keep going. And then I've just this year had a rule that like I just at my improv shows, I'll have a couple of drinks. It makes it just kind of like a fun night. You know, I kind of look forward to it. You know, it loosens me up a bit.
Mm.
But that's it. So I've done 3 of those this year. I've had like 3 nights where I've had a drink and otherwise I've just like alcohol free. So I've been leaning a little bit more into treats, like even forgiving myself, like giving myself a bit more permission to go
to replace the alcohol with.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a methadone.
It does. But I feel like that. Yeah. I don't feel like I've really missed the alcohol because I feel like I've got a payoff of going, if I see, like if I'm in a cafe or whatever, and they've got a piece of cake that looks delicious, I can just have the cake and not just really feel.
Well, that's the same rationale. Like people who go, well, I went to the gym 3 times this week so I can have a slice of cake. By not drinking, you're probably doing just as much good for your body. Like if I'm going to the gym 3 days a week, having that slice of cake, but also having beers on the weekend, then probably cancels out the gym. But you, by not drinking, probably are doing like more to keep weight off and stay healthy than people who are drinking and exercising.
Yeah. Well, I think I've Indiana Jones'd it in that I think that I am probably exactly the same. Like I've replaced what like, you know, sometimes people lose weight when they stop drinking. I've kind of perfectly balanced the replacement of the amount of sugar and treats I'm taking in. So I think I'm about exactly the same in regard to like weight and stuff. But yeah, I've definitely been eating more treats. So Saturday night had a show. So like literally only had like 4 beers in total for the night, but woke up feeling a bit dusty on Sunday because I'm not drinking. So I went to the... like this little like shop, country shop, like, you know, that's...
General store,
right? But not the local one to me, one a little bit further on that has a little cafe attached to it. And they did like a halloumi egg breakfast roll. And I don't know what the bread they made it on, but both Amy and I were like, what is this? She goes... like, what does it taste like? And we both said at the same time, pikelets. It was like...
oh, that soft, squishy. That,
yeah.
Oh.
And the way they cooked it, it was like 2 pikelets and then just like this, like incredible...
so like a flatbread? Was it
like
flat?
A flatbread, but yeah, like, but still sweet and
spongy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And like, and then just like egg and halloumi and like spinach and like some
great
sort of sauce and whatever. It was so good. But... exactly what you were saying about that idea of going. So now I'm like, okay, well, next time I have a drink and I feel a bit dusty, I'm going to go and get like a bunch of those sandwiches, but I'm not going to ruin it by, because I can go there every second day and get that sandwich, but I'm going to keep
it's
it.
It's a special boy.
Special occasion.
I've been a good boy.
Yeah.
I think it's important. Well, I know. It's important to me to have like rewards, but you know, sometimes you read about people who are super disciplined and I wonder, like, people who don't give themselves any of that kind of stuff, you know, whether it's like, you know, physically with their training and they run marathons or whatever like that, or they just don't allow themselves to kind of slip up. Do you think there is, would be more strenuous? Like for you, if you were going to say like, I'm just not going to do anything, no vices, just like all about work and getting fit and blah, blah, blah. Do you think that requires more of your energy than I'm going to work and then maybe I'll eat something or maybe I'll feel bad. Maybe I'll wake up a bit dusty, but then deal with it. Like what's more taxing to your mental health and your energy levels? Dealing with the guilt or dealing with the kind of, what's the word, like abstinence?
I've done both, like much more of one than the other, but I have done both. I've had periods of time in my life where I had-
everything's
where I had
no
crack,
vices.
Crack at just like- probably not no vices actually, but like was living pretty clean, certainly very fit and like, you know.
Is that when you first were in LA and you had the trainer and stuff? Yeah, you were very fit.
Yeah.
Very, very working very
hard.
It
was just like, yeah, it was a specific time in my life and like I gave that a crack. I think that I feel better now than I did then. So... you know, just in a general sense of like what it is that I like about life.
If something big had clicked in that mode, like you landed a huge TV deal or had gotten cast in a film or something like that, do you think that you would still be in that mode because fuck, like it worked? Or, I mean, I guess it's impossible to answer, but.
Well, no, because it's like, I mean, you know, The Rock just kept, you know.
Keeping up that
being the
work
Rock,
ethic.
Right? Like there hasn't been a point where The Rock's like, oh, well, you know what, I can. Let myself go now, kick back, like not keep trying so hard, you know, not work so hard. You know, he's got enough money. He doesn't need to keep doing anything. Like, so I don't know. It's an interesting question. It's like a interesting hypothetical. I would suggest that what I know about myself is what, like the things that make me happy. I think I'm mostly made happy by small things.
Yep.
Like I'm not really a person who's into...
world domination.
Yeah. But also, no, but even just like, I'm going to buy a boat or I'm going to like have this thing or like, I don't derive like great pleasure from like, here's my expensive pair of shoes that I own or whatever the equivalent is, right? I like...
freedom.
Yeah.
You like the freedom that money and
yeah, I like that. But I like to be able to like, you know, sleep when you want and eat what you want
freedom.
And like just watch some TV. Like... I kind of enjoy that more than like the trappings that might come with something that look more successful than that. So I think No, I don't think that I would have. It's impossible question,
well,
I suppose. But
if you look at the way your life has gone, because I don't think I'd be necessarily any different. I like you, have gone through phases of like incredible discipline and focus, and that has worked for me. Like, has brought me success or taken me to places that I was like, oh shit. But what I've realized is that I'm constantly changing, and something that I was really good for me and worked for me 10 years ago is not necessarily the same person I am now. Like, I'm always very surprised when I sort of look back sort of 5 years, 10 years. And, you know, I was cutting a birthday video for my sister and look at family photos. And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, I remember so clearly what my worldview was as a 10-year-old, as a 17-year-old, and it's so different. Like, and, you know, that is one of the things that I'm certain of, is that I will change again in 10 years. So I don't think I would put all my, maybe I'd do it for a while, but then eventually exhaustion or distraction or something would take you out of it. And you'd see that things work out okay. Cause that's what's happened in my real life, is that I've let go of that, you know, totem or whatever I thought was making me happy or bring, and things have been fine. Things have worked out. Like,
I think, like, for health reasons, I could see myself, like, I could see the benefits of being, you know, fitter and just like a bit more health conscious. Like, you know, you get to a certain age where you're just like aware of the fact that if you're not, like, both my parents have type 2 diabetes, right? So like the way I eat and stuff.
More ice cream.
It's probably fine for me now, but it's not necessarily something that you need to do for the next 15 or 20 years, because then it becomes problematic. It's in your genetics. And so I've been really surprised. Like, this is, like, I mean, this is so stupid, but like, so I finally, now that I'm on the medicinal cannabis, I've finally made the switch to the vaporizer. And so I've been using the vaporizer. And between the fact that I haven't been drinking and that I've basically given up cigarettes because I'm on the vaporizer now, that to me feels like two really big. Yeah. Like, even though, but I don't feel like I have been like in a, like, if someone said, do you feel particularly like healthy or like focused or motivated or whatever, those two things have just been really natural progressions from me just having time to.
It wasn't like you hit rock bottom or some calamitous thing forced you to abandon these things. It was just very organic.
Yeah, no, they've literally just been things that came about because I just started to feel a bit like, I think maybe I just feel a bit better, you know, living like this than the other way. And so they both feel like, neither, like, particularly with the booze, I've always said, because I never said I was like giving up or anything. I just said I'm just not like drinking at the moment. And the funny thing about having these few nights where I have had a drink is like, it's more than enough.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I haven't enjoyed the drink that I had, but I'm just like, nah, this is, I'm fine.
Yeah. I've had the same change where the first beer is always great. I love it. And then the second one, I'm like, and if I get to a third, which is very rare these days, it's never any good. Gemma and I went out first time with a babysitter a couple of weeks ago. We had some friends organize dinner and drinks, and four couples, all with young kids, all with babysitters. And so we were so excited. Like, Gemma and I, we got dressed up and met the babysitter. She was great, felt really good about that. And so we caught this Uber out, and there was cocktails and good conversation with, you know, new friends and we're in a new place. Everything was just fucking great. And I had a couple of cocktails, and then half the group broke off because they had to go see the babysitter, and then the other half kicked on to a pub. But when we got to the pub, like, it was chasing the dragon. Like, we got there and, you know, half the group is gone now, and so the vibe's a bit different, and now you're in a pub with a sport on TV. We're all like dressed up because we've come from a restaurant, and like 10 years ago, I wouldn't give a shit. You know, there's alcohol and that's why you're there. So I don't care where we're drinking or what I'm wearing or anything like that. But this was our special night. I'd been a good boy. He's detecting a theme, Will. But it was just funny. Like, it's just the social aspect, you know, part of what Jim and I were looking forward to moving up here is we actually have a bunch of friends who just coincidentally have all moved up to the same area around the same time. And, you know, Jim was saying, I reckon we'll see our friends more, even though we live further apart now, than we did in Sydney. Because Sydney's just one of those towns where it's just, I don't know, you're just busier, it's harder to get around, it's expensive, all that kind of stuff. And sure enough, like, we've seen our friends. But the great thing is, yeah, we've met at a pub or an RSL or down at the beach or whatever, but it's predominantly been about like catching up and having, you know, not getting wasted, just having like a couple of drinks or whatever. But it's just been this, I said to Jim, are we growing up? Like, is this what happening? We've moved
getting
into
old.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not hating it. I've got to be honest with you. Like, I'm like, and I still feel like a fucking, like a, just a total dork, you know, like still feel like a teenager at times.
Oh, well, don't you think that you, I mean, maybe, I'm interested in your perspective because you've got like a child now.
Yeah.
So there is some element of like the reality of that situation.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I know anything.
I don't know anything. I have that thought multiple times a day where I see her and she's so delightful and I'm seeing her like make sense of the world. And you obviously have these in like, you know, deeply held things of I want to protect and guide. But then I'm like, you? What are you going to protect her from? What advice are you going to give her? You're a fucking podcaster, dude. Like, unless she wants a career in like a like an alternative media industry, right. A little known non-profitable alternative media industry. I don't know, man. It is that constant thing of, but Foz actually gave me some advice just before Iona was born, which is like, you just need to keep them well-fed, warm and safe. And if you just keep those basic principles, like we took her to the beach today and she loves water, no fear. Surf beach, and so she crawled into the water, and so she's not quite walking yet, so you've got to kind of keep an eye on her because she's low to the water, and this wave just kicked up and hit her.
Yeah.
And she went under and she rolled like three or four times and came out and, you know, spat water out, and it's like a real heart-stopping thing and gave us both a real fright. But at the same time, it's like, well, she's fine and we were there, and if something bad had happened, we could have got her somewhere. And countless, this is going to happen countless more times. And, but what are you going to do? Like, this is the decision we've made, and the reward I'm getting from it and the day to day kind of the grounding it gives you. I'm terrified about what the future might bring. I'm terrified about going home and, you know, something happening and not knowing what to do. But, you know, you could say that about a lot of aspects of my life. You know, I'm not on a set path with anything, Will. You know, I don't have a regular job. I don't, you know, work regular hours. I'm pursuing this kind of career that has no guarantees, no security. So adding a fucking life into the mix, you know, it's just, I'm juggling chainsaws and now you want to throw like a flaming torch in? Sure, I might get burnt, but fucking hell. Like, I haven't cut myself up yet.
But I guess that's like, yeah. So, I mean, part of that is, yeah, you've moved to a place where you can have like a, like nice, you know.
Space
and like, you know, environment to like raise your child. So basically, essentially what you've done is you've gone, you know what, Hillary Clinton, I reckon you were onto something with it takes a village to raise your child. And so we're going to move to a better village.
Yeah.
Because we need the village to be doing some of the responsibility of raising this child, because we're not going to be able to nail all of it ourselves.
Yeah. And you do see, like, I'm very skeptical. Everyone that I know has kids says to me, oh, wait till you meet parents of this kids the same age as you. It's the best. And I'm like, no, I don't want any more friends. I'm not going to be friends with someone just because we both have kids. It seems like a dumb reason to become friends. But already started to make friends with people. Because when that happens, like, there's immediate, suddenly there's four pairs of eyeballs on the situation. You're giving advice, you're trading knowledge, like... And it is a form of protection. Like, you can dump your kid at that person's house in an emergency if you need to. Like, so yeah, it does make sense. Like, when I think about living in Sydney, I love Sydney and I have nothing but fond memories from there. But because you can't afford to live in a community, because you're generally in high density living or no, don't even really have backyards where kids can go and kick a footy. Like, it's not a very communal place apart from the beach, but. Up here, that there is just definitely that feeling of, you know, everyone's watching out for everyone else. It's really nice because I can't fucking do it.
No, thank God. That's what you're saying. Like, we made it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have to pretend they're not vaccinated, but other than that.
Well, there is quite a bit of that. Let's just say I take hand sanitizer to the park and I scrub every bar that I see a sus-looking kid licking. I'm like, I, before you get on that, let me just fucking Clorox that, because I reckon that kid has never seen a needle.
You
want to
go on the swings? Daddy will get his hazmat suit.
How long have we done?
It's about 40 minutes, okay, about 37, cool. 38.
All right. Well, we've got one letter that we can get to that, okay, I thought we can probably delve into a bit deeper. By the way, we should mention that the TOEFOP 12 were officially inducted this week, marked by some beautiful original artwork by James Fosdyke. Now, that was originally going to be a prize just for the TOEFOP 12, but it is so damn good. We've put it up on Redbubble and you can get it in any form, t-shirts, long sleeve posters, whatever. It's one of his coolest pieces, I reckon.
And also, great piece of art. Amy saw it today. She was like, oh, I love that new Foz poster. And she goes, what's that about? Oh, how far do you reckon into me trying to explain what that was about? Amy decided she was not interested in me explaining what it was about.
Like 2-3 words.
And I got through Biggest Horse in All of Norway.
Right.
And I lost a lot of interest after that. But I led with what I thought I might keep into the story.
So if you want to get a copy of that, you can go to redbubble.com. You can also go to tofop.com and check out some of our other great podcasts. Will does one called Willosophy. Who's on this week?
This week on the show, Tom Tilley, former host of Hack and the Daily Briefing podcast, which is people really like that show, Jan Fran and Jamila Rizvi and a whole bunch of really excellent people. It's a daily news podcast. So Tom Tilley, he's a really good guest, actually, like really cool stories. And later this week, Corey Tutt returns, who was the New South Wales Young Australian of the Year, who started the organisation Deadly Science, which is helping Indigenous literacy in this country. And he's a really cool guy, Corey. So he's back on the show just talking about the changes in his life since we last spoke.
Two Guys, One Cup. The guest is Shane D'Elia, probably the most beloved Bulldog celebrity supporter going around.
Take that, Chris Hemsworth.
Judging from the feedback, he is a beloved figure, not just him. at the kennel, but footy-wide. Really great chat. And coming up this week is Dave Thornton talking about the Cats. You heard him briefly after the grand final, but he's quite heartbroken. So we get into more deep Cats chat this Friday.
That'll be great. I love Thorno.
So this came in from Anthony. Headline is Meanwhile in Colombia.
Okay.
Hey, Will and Charlie. With all the talk about sheep jokes recently, I remembered that there was a documentary nearly 10 years ago about donkey love in Colombia. And he sent us a link to an article in the Sydney Morning Herald.
Okay.
So this is from 2012. The headline, Donkey Sex Gets Thumbs Up from Censors by Andrew Taylor. A film depicting bestiality gets a surprising pass from the classification board. Gay sex is more likely to offend the standards of morality and decency than men having sex with donkeys, as far as Australia's censors are concerned.
Yeah.
A film depicting sex acts between men and donkeys was screened at the Sydney Film Festival last week after an exemption from the classification board was granted. The federal government agency responsible for classifying films, the classification board, did not ask to view Donkey Love before granting permission for it to screen at the Melbourne Underground Film Festival and Sydney Underground Film Festival. No film can be publicly screened in Australia without first being rated by the classification board, which may refuse its classification if it offends the standards of morality and decency. However, it may permit festivals to screen films that have not been rated. In contrast, the classification board banned LA Zombie, which features a zombie character having homosexual sex with dead bodies, from being screened at the Melbourne International Film Festival in 2010. The director of the classification board, Donald McDonald, not the footballer, right?
I imagine not the footballer.
So there's two people in Australia called Donald McDonald.
I reckon there's more than two people in Australia called Donald McDonald.
What's the deal with calling your son Donald when you're McDonald?
Well, I mean, you got Ronald McDonald, you got Donald McDonald. I feel like it just...
It's dumb, though.
Is it?
Yeah. Lawson Clawson? If my name was Lawson Clawson.
Lawson McClawson. We should put a Mc in it. That'd be better.
The director of the classification board, Donald McDonald, told The Age he refused to grant the film an exemption from the classification to screen at the festival because the film, if classified, would be classified as X18 or RC. And in this circumstance, the law requires the classification board director to refuse such an exemption. The director of the Sydney Underground Film Festival, Stefan Propescu, said he was surprised the classification board had not asked for more information about Donkey Love or to view it before granting the festival permission to screen it. Why don't you think they asked? I mean, it's called Donkey Love.
Clearly.
Did you think it was an animated,
like a hilarious Pixar movie.
Oh, they thought, yeah, okay, new from Pixar.
Yeah.
Donkey Love. Oh, hang on.
Yeah, it's just a cartoon donkey with a like the DreamWorks raised eyebrow.
So, I think weren't they just choosing not to see it in the name of, you know, allowing free artist expression and art?
I guess
like
so.
They knew that if they did see it, that it would then not be able to be shown. So the only way they could get around that was by not seeing it.
Yeah. Yes. Donkey Love, which purports to be a documentary. So I think this is the author of the article, a bit suspect on it. So it might be, maybe I'm thinking like a Borat type thing because it's a comedy. Donkey Love, which purports to be a documentary.
Of course it's a comedy. I mean, you don't have to explain about this film where a man has sex with a donkey.
No, when I read this article, I thought maybe it was like a serious art house documentary because it's like they're focusing on the culture of donkey.
Oh,
donkey
you're thinking love. About Don Quixote.
It's a documentary, purports to be a documentary about the tradition of Colombian men having sexual relations with donkeys, and it won Best Documentary at the Melbourne Underground Film Festival. I was very nervous about awarding it, said Richard Wollstonecroft, the director of Muff.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It's a controversial...
I hope the headline in the Muff newsletter, by the way, was Donkey Gong.
It's a controversial film. But jury head Gene Gregoritis was very insistent it should win. Coincidentally, Gene also owns a donkey farm. He was crying. He said it was the most beautiful film he'd seen since Titanic. Not true. I made that last bit up. One scene, Will, in Donkey Love shows the filmmakers laughing as they film a man committing an act of bestiality on the side of the road.
Mm.
The director of Donkey Love, Daryl Stoneage, said the film had divided audiences but had not been banned overseas. Mm. You make half the room never want to talk to you again and the other half come up to you and tell you what a pair of balls you must have to make a film like this, he said. I think when people actually see the film, they get desensitized to the act pretty fast and are able to watch the funny and informative documentary about a cultural practice that most people don't know anything about. However, he said the whole film had made him feel uncomfortable. Stoneage was unapologetic about treating the cultural practice of bestiality, which many people would find abhorrent and illegal, with humour. I'm guessing the same people would have a hard time wrapping their heads around a country full of bestiality, he said. It's too bad. There should be more funny documentaries. I think that about every time I watch the 20th documentary about 9/11 being an inside job, or some documentary narrated by Leonardo DiCaprio or Matt Damon telling me that what's melting or that I should recycle more.
You know what I love? Is that the fucking, this is the best now. Because this is the director.
Yeah.
The director of Donkey
Daniel
Love. Has some Martin Scorsese-esque opinions about the film industry. And he realizes this is his time to get them off his chest.
This is my favorite line. If you don't think a country full of people having sex with donkeys is funny, then maybe there's something wrong with you.
You're the problem.
So indignant about his bestiality film.
You know what he is? On the front foot.
Yeah.
He is answering a lot of questions.
He is the uncle who tells a racist joke at a family dinner, and when everyone gets upset, he's like, I'm just having a laugh.
What?
If you don't think that's funny.
No,
we're dead inside, are we?
Oh, God, come on, Graham.
You thought this was Christmas, not a bloody funeral. Daryl. Uncle Daryl, sit down. The film does not have an Australian distributor yet, but Tyler Chandler from the film's production company said he'd be happy to screen the film at other film festivals. We don't have any specific policies on bestiality because it's illegal in Australia, said a spokeswoman for the RSPCA.
Oh, okay, hang on.
That's not him.
For a minute.
That's what I thought too.
I thought that was him.
We don't have, I'll do a different voice. Yeah. We don't have any specific policies on bestiality because it's illegal in Australia. Well, that's a dumb reason not to have.
No, well, you can, I mean,
they must have policies.
You
right?
probably don't have to say you don't have specific policies on it. You probably could have just said it's illegal in Australia and people could have implied.
Well, she does pull up with, but from our perspective, it's unacceptable in any form.
Oh, good. Yeah. I was going to say, you should just clear up. We are the RSPCA. We are against it. We don't really need to think it through. We're against it.
All right.
We don't want to play your pin the cock on a donkey game. Uncle Daryl.
That's the end of the episode. Yep. Have we plugged everything? We did the website. Patreon. There is a bonus episode up there at the moment where we do a deep dive on flat earth theories, and we'll be recording a reaction video to Elias's brother's world's biggest water slide, or whatever he called it in his email. So we'll be posting that very soon. So if you want to join Patreon, patreon.com/tofop, bunch of great content in there, and you're really helping us out. It's actually been amazing. The amount of support, I get notifications every time a new person joins up, and that's my shit's been blowing up.
Up. Thank you to everyone. We obviously, want to be doing more stuff, and your support makes that possible.
Go get yourself TOEFOP 12.
Oh, yeah, a TOEFOP 12 t-shirt.
Red Bubble t-shirt. I'm Charlie Clausen.
I'm Will Anderson.